You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. 216-578-0850. Let's go to the phone lines. We're going to have some fun ones here. We got Dino, Dennis, and then our friend Terry is back, who is going to declare that the Browns will win one game. Dino, welcome to the show.
Guys, how are we doing today?
Good, man.
All right, Dino, how are you?
Yeah, I'm a little shocked about Paul Kruger, but I kind of got the feeling that it's understandable. What are you going to do? It's the nature of this business. My question to you guys is that they really got to emphasize a lot on two things. The offensive line, which in my opinion is horrendous right now, and that defense. Is there anything that they can do quickly, do you think, with that offensive line to protect Robert Griffin a little bit better?
I get, my only inclination of what we could do is we could see a little bit more 12 personnel, which brings an extra tight end on the field, which would be probably Randall Telfer, where you kind of keep him in, you maybe release Barnage, you get, you know, Pryor on one side, Coleman on the other, or Hawkins, you know, out as well, whoever those two wide receivers are, and you maybe sneak out the back as well. That's probably the best you can do at this point right now to protect Robert Griffin III.
Well, you've also, what you've got to do is you've got to get the ball out quickly. You've got to do a better job of that. That's not something that they have done a good job yet. They've got to figure out a way to get the ball out. They've got RG3 can't hold it, and they've got to be on the same page. If they can do that, they can have success. When they are struggling is when the ball's not coming out. It looks like he's holding it and the pocket collapsed. I thought it was a rough day. Austin Pastore is big and strong, but when he faces true speed on the edge, you got to give him a chip over there. He had, I think, a little bit of a rough day when Dan France came in. Noah Spence ate his lunch pretty well. Cam Irving missed a stunt coming up the middle. So there are things that need to be cleaned up. And those guys really haven't still gotten a chance to play together,
no.
The five of them, all that much. And most of the sacks came after Joe Thomas left. But they've got to figure out a way to get the ball out quickly, continuously, over the course of a full game. Let's go to Dennis in his car. Dennis.
Hello.
Hey Dennis, you there?
How you doing, man?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I hate to ask this question at this point of in the season, but I don't know. I've been thinking about it for quite a while. Let's assume that things don't go as well as we planned with the team this year. Let's say we wind up with the 2nd and the 10th pick. Looking at our roster right now, what two positions would you try to fill with those things?
Well, I think I'll go first, Nathan, then you can kind of jump in. I believe that it all depends what type of year. If we go, the number two pick is going to be a 2-14, probably 3-13, 4-11 type of season, correct? Am I safe in saying that? Okay. Then that means that Robert Griffin III probably didn't play the way that Hugh Jackson, Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry believed Robert Griffin III needs to play. So you might be in the quarterback market at that point at number two to go get young and kind of the pick of the litter, and maybe you combo 2-10 to get to one. I don't know whoever that guy is at the end of the season. But 10, I think I might take the number one pass rusher with the 10th pick in the draft.
So when I look at it, I think you're exactly right. It comes down to whether or not Robert Griffin III played the kind of year that makes you feel like, okay, he can be the franchise quarterback. If not, the number one thing you want to do is get a quarterback. It depends on, does Josh Gordon make it through the year? Is he in your long-term plans? Does Terrell Pryor continue to ascend? If not, you're probably looking at a receiver as well. In my ideal world, you don't need to do anything on the offensive side. You're good with RG3. You're good with Gordon and Coleman and Pryor at wide receiver. And you want to get, I want another pass rusher up front, a beast defensive lineman pass rusher, and I want a free safety, a ball-hawking, dominant free safety, an Ed Reed free safety. I don't know if
but
there
is 2-10?
I would take anywhere, or you could move. We know they like to move down.
Right.
So if you don't have the need for a quarterback, you could move from 10, say, to the middle of the first if that's where a free safety is. It just depends on their evaluations. But I think in an ideal situation, you'd like to go defense. But it's very, very possible that you will be going and maybe using one or both of those first to combo up to get where you need to get the franchise quarterback that this team desperately needs. But I hope Robert Griffin III can be that guy. That would be great because it puts you in a position to add some more blue chippers to this team going forward. 216-578-0850. We've got Terry in Cleveland. Terry, I can't wait.
Hey, your favorite caller.
Yes, sir.
How
What's
you
up,
doing?
Man? I'm good, dude. How are
hey,
you?
Hey, listen, here's what I got. You got three lawyers trying to run a football team. None of them are football guys, okay? You got one guy coming from baseball trying to put analytics into football in a certain way that won't work, okay? And it all starts up top again. And another thing, you know who the next stable player on the Browns should be to go? Joe Thomas. They keep putting him in these Pro Bowls, not deservingly the last 3 years. He's doing a lot of holding. Last year in one series alone, he had three false starts in one drive alone. You know why you hold, okay? It's because you're getting beat. That's why people hold, because you're getting beat. You're being bested. He should go. For some reason, there's this undying love affair with him in Cleveland. He's not the player he used to be. They need to get some younger player in there, at least get something for him, which probably now other people aren't going to give a lot for him. The Browns will be lucky to win one football game. Go down the schedule. Be realistic. I heard it the other day. This isn't my saying, but now that I heard it on another station, they went down game by game. They got to week 13, and they still hadn't had a win, and it got worse the last three games.
That's all I got. All right, Terry, I appreciate it. I think that it's way too early to condemn what the you know, front office has done yet. We haven't even played one game.
Correct.
So let's just, Terry, you could be proven out to be correct. You could be proven out to be incorrect. Let's at least see how it plays out going forward. When I look at the schedule, there are plenty of winnable games on the schedule. It's just a matter of can they execute and can they win those games? That's the question. They certainly can beat a team like Philadelphia. They can beat a team like Tennessee.
They can beat Miami.
They can beat Miami. They can beat the Chargers. I mean, that's four right there. And they haven't gotten swept in the division in quite some time, even as bad as they were last year. They were able to win a game in the division. So you hope that they can do that. You hope that they can find a way and get better as the season goes on. But I think I'll take anybody's bet that they have a better record than 1-15. I will take that.
I agree with you.
Any day of the week. Mo Pedman doesn't even want to bet me on it, but I want to. It would be great. All right, let's go to Jeff in Canton now. Jeff.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man.
Good.
Hey, I just heard it this morning at the barbershop, and you know how credible all that information is. Supposedly, the rumor has it through Chris Spielman that Hugh Jackson is waiting until the backup at Cincinnati, who just played last night. If you watched him, he did a pretty good job.
But quarterback?
Yes.
A.J. McCarron?
They're saying that he is going to be our next guy, and that Hugh Jackson is just keeping his eye on him for when his contract is done. That's who they're taking. Now, whether that's
He's in his third year of his rookie contract, so he's got at least one more year, and then he's got to go, and then he'd be a free agent, and they could find an they could keep him, they could do whatever they want. So that's, I don't think, could he like him? Could he be happy with what he got out of A.J. McCarron and think that he's a guy that he could work with in the future if it comes to pass? Yes, but
A.J.
Right now.
Cody Kessler is the Cleveland Browns' A.J. McCarron.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And we've already pulled the trigger on one of those guys. And to figure, if A.J. McCarron hits the open market and is, you know, even playing the backup role in Cincinnati for the next 2 years, and he's got all this hype centered around how great he is, but yet he's never played a snap, that to me is the Matt Flynn syndrome, where you've gotten in some cleanup duty, maybe when the Bengals have locked up, you know, the playoffs or first round bye, you see A.J. McCarron and you go, wow, that guy's going to be a franchise quarterback. And then he goes and gets paid $40, $50 million, and he goes on himself. You know what I mean? In a new uniform, but he's got a big paycheck, so props to him.
And by the way,
I just don't want to be that team.
No, I agree with you, and I'd like to find it in the draft. And just by the way, because people are tweeting in, you know, are up in arms about the Joe Thomas call. I'm just not even getting into it. You know, Joe Thomas is a 9-time Pro Bowler in 9 seasons. Obviously, he is highly respected in this locker room, around the league, and he's a very, very good player. Could you make it a case that he had some penalty issues last year? Of course you can. And does everybody maintain their level the whole time? But no. But Joe Thomas is a very good football player and probably the best and most consistent player on this roster. I wasn't agreeing with him by any way. It's not even worth getting into.
Correct.
And as Steve Day says, so the front office should be fired after 3 preseason games, and Thomas is a bum, and a barber has inside info. What a day. Yes, that was good. The barbershop. Mopedman just walked back in. Apparently at the barbershop it was said that all Hugh Jackson is doing is waiting for A.J. McCarron to be a free agent so that he can go back with A.J. McCarron. That's the word on the streets there, Mo. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Seth DeValve. We'll also take your phone calls, 216-578-0850 on CBD's Gerd Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Mo Pedman snacking on a Newton. It's not a cookie. It's a Newton, folks, here. And it is. It's a good cookie. It's a good time. One of the guys that the Browns hope can be a nice situational player for them in his rookie year is tight end Seth DeValve. Back from the hamstring injury, saw his most extensive action of the preseason against Tampa Bay, both on offense and on special teams. He joined me in the Dog Bowl earlier today, and here is our conversation.
How did it feel to get out there and get your first taste of NFL action there in the game against Tampa?
It was great. You know, it was good to be back on the field playing, catching, tackling, special teams, offense. It was great to be back out there.
Let's start with the week of joint practice. That was kind of really your first taste to get out there, get in the mix. I saw you make a lot of nice catches there. How did that feel?
That was good. That was good. Yeah, that was really my first real live snaps against another team. You know, I played one snap against Atlanta, didn't get a lot of action. Got a lot more action last week in Tampa Bay, in practice against them.
Sure.
Kind of shaking the rust off a little bit, getting my feet back underneath me, running, blocking, kind of showing me how much work there is to do and, you know, taking it one step at a time.
You weren't able to physically do much for a lot of training camp, but mentally I'm sure you were getting prepared. How did that help you when you finally did get the opportunity to get on the field?
It helped tremendously. I mean, being able to watch and see the offense and, you know, special teams from big picture point of view, kind of getting to sit back and see how everything works, you know, take diligent notes and in meetings. You know, I can pay attention just as well as anybody else. My injury doesn't prevent me from doing that. So,
right.
Yeah, I felt mentally like I was ready to, you know, get in and do my thing.
Did you play special teams at all in college?
Yeah, I did. I did. I played for the majority of my career until I was a senior.
Okay. So. Is that something you enjoy?
Yeah, I do. I do. Special teams is, you know, like Coach Tabor says, no second chances. So you line up, there's one play, you got to do it all out. There's a lot of fun things on special teams.
What was kind of the message to the special teams room after the game against Tampa? Obviously, there was the pick punt return for a touchdown, mm-hmm. a couple long returns. How do you guys clean that up?
Yeah, the message is we're going to open our notebooks, we're going to watch the film, we're going to take notes, and we're going to correct things. You know, once something happens once, the expectation is you correct it and it doesn't happen again. So, you know, we approach the meeting like we approach every meeting, with great attention to detail and cleaning up things that were errors on film.
Right now, do you feel more comfortable on teams or do you feel more comfortable at tight end?
I feel comfortable doing both. I think we spend more time on the offensive side of the ball, you know, in terms of preparation. So I guess I feel more comfortable there, but I feel comfortable doing both.
Do you have a sense of kind of what your role can be or will be in this offense this year?
I'm doing a lot of different things. My role may be to be doing a lot of different things. And that would be great, to be honest, because, you know, I get to mix it up a little bit. Wherever they put me, whatever they have me do, I'd be very happy to do.
They talk often about the jump in speed from college to the NFL, and I imagine from the Ivy League to the NFL is maybe even a little bit of a bigger jump. How has that adjustment been for you?
The adjustment to speed has been fine. I think maybe the bigger adjustment is adjustment in size.
Uh-huh.
That's probably been more noticeable for me. You know, there's things you can get away with in college because you're one of the biggest guys that you can get
yeah,
away
right.
with here. So, you know, technique is more important really than almost anything else.
All right, Seth, I know you got to run, so I want to thank you for your time. It's good to see you out there and excited to see what you can do against Chicago and then when they really start counting September the 11th against the Eagles.
Thank you very much.
It's Browns rookie Seth DeValve, and with the release of E.J. Bibbs today, I think you really see that the four tight ends who are going to make this roster will be Gary Barnidge, Randall Telfer, Connor Hamlet, and Seth DeValve.
Yes.
He's a guy, a former receiver in college, that I think they can use flexed out and try to create some mismatches with him, and it'll be interesting to see how often he gets on the field. We know that he was a guy that got a lot of special teams work and did a pretty good job as a special teams performer in that game against Tampa Bay. Let's go back to the phone lines, 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. Let's go to Chris in Virginia. Chris, welcome.
Hey, guys. Mo Pedman's in the studio today.
Mo Pedman is in the studio today.
He's eating us out of house and home.
Well, yeah, what's he eating today?
Everything.
Fig Newtons. We've seen Fig Newtons. We saw three steaks, two
a pile of food so large, so large that I couldn't tell. Like, it looked like Vegas vacation.
But to be fair, who eats more, me or Mo Pedman? I eat a lot of food.
You do eat a lot of food. But Mo Pedman's is like a mosh of food.
Yeah.
We know a lot about you, Nathan, but, you know, Mo's kind of like...
He's a mystery.
He's a mystery, man.
He's a mystery, right.
He's very large, though.
I know. I got that part. Right,
yes, and his legs rub together when he walks.
He also is big-hearted and just a large personality, just a large, like, he's just a great person. He has a large impact.
Oh, was that him?
Some sounds. That was the sound of Mo Pedman there.
All right. Okay. He makes noises too.
He does.
Yes, apparently he does.
Okay. Well, my sister was in town this weekend, and I don't think she's going to go for it. So you could tell Mo that that's not.
Does she like men over 350 pounds?
She's a yoga teacher, and she doesn't even eat gluten. So, you know.
Doesn't eat gluten? That is not. Mo Pedman does not know about gluten free.
No.
Right.
Mo Pedman gets gluten injections.
We're going to ban you out of it. Pipe down over there. All right, Chris, what do we got for you? Were you just calling for Mo Pedman fun?
No, not just Mo. I just want to throw out there that I've been through this with the Browns for as long as everybody else. I still have a positive outlook. It just looks like it's going to take a little longer view and stick with that, you know, process. And I know everybody hates the word, but and then, you know, we want to see how it grows. We got to give this a chance. This is the bottom of this year right now, what we're seeing. It's got to get better. You know, it's got to, because we have all this young talent. I believe in it, and I believe in you. So
I do too, and I agree with you as well that it's a little early in the third preseason game of a totally new era to you know, completely jump off of the train. But this is a team that, with its fan base, is going to have to start delivering. And to me, it's about what does it look like? And what it looked like against the Buccaneers was not good enough.
No, not even close.
That didn't look good enough. That didn't look like what we wanted it to look like. That didn't look in any way, shape, or form what we expected a Hugh Jackson coach team, how we expected them to perform, et cetera, other than maybe the bomb to Josh Gordon. But it will get better. It has to. And he will put in the work. You can know that. The players will put in the work to try to get better. It's just going to take some time. Dan and Hershey Pa.
Hey, guys.
What's up, man?
I wasn't going to call in, but, I mean, my goodness, we hit a bump in the road, and it's a Titanic, and we've hit an iceberg, and it's 2 hours. We're all going to die. Oh, my God.
I mean, it is, yes, there are
some unhappy folks. Yeah, I mean, it's a meaningless game, and there were some improvements in the line. I mean, it's funny. I saw the score, and I didn't watch it until the following morning, and I was expecting the worst, and it really wasn't as bad as I expected. I mean, it wasn't good, but I mean, my goodness, we're working it out here, you know? So, wow, it's just, you know, I guess the only thing that's going to cure it is we got to win. So, I mean, for people out there, I mean, I do business consulting, and I always look at best case, worst case scenario. So, I mean, the only thing to be worried about, I think, is we have key people that can't get hurt. If they do, we will have a tough, the season will be really hard. But let's say that happens, worst case scenario. You know, RG3 gets hurt or he doesn't play well, you know, and it just, well, we've got two first round picks next
But Dan,
year.
Don't you, can't you say that, you know, about a lot of teams right now?
Yeah,
I mean, look
I mean,
at how,
my goodness.
I know I was at my son broke his wire in his braces this morning, so I had to go before school and take him to the orthodontist. And the orthodontist
is
like, hey, I visit my, you know, my site. At my window site, we'll call it. And he goes, I think the over-under for the Cowboys was 9.5 wins. Romo gets hurt, and they are off the board.
Right.
There is no bet to make. So it just goes to show how losing one player can make or break your season.
Yeah, and it's always been that way. I mean, injuries always kind of, you know, what would happen to the Steelers if Roethlisberger got hurt. I mean,
right.
You know, so come on. You know, and the thing that with the, you know, just to address the Kruger thing, which I thought was kind of interesting, actually. I mean, when I look at his position, wouldn't you just plug Ogba in there and just, because Kruger was pretty much just stopping the run on the way to the passer. I mean, even though he was on 2 points instead of three, and where, you know, would then who would back him up? Is Schobert his backup? And would Scooby Wright come over and swing between inside and outside at that point? Who's going to back up Orchard? I mean, that's what I'd like to talk about is, you know, the how you see things are going on the 3-4 now. You know,
I think in the 3-4, your starting outside linebackers are going to be Agba and Orchard, and your backups are going to be Joe Schobert and Cam Johnson as of now. Could a veteran pass rusher be released somewhere that could become
yes.
cheaper than Paul Kruger?
And
yes.
have a little bit of a hybrid background, meaning a 3-4 yes. background and a 4-3 background, depending on, you know, how tenured he is in the National Football League.
Yes, so I don't think this roster is set, and I think they're positioning it to be the best that it can be, but they also want to see these young guys, and I think you're going to see a lot of Og, but you're going to see a lot of Nassip, and as I said before, and the numbers back it up, you're going to see more four-man fronts. They were in a majority four-man front in this past game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You're going to see that. Ray Horton and Hugh Jackson are going to do whatever they can to be successful and cater this to their personnel, and that might mean some change. And the good news is, or bad, whatever, however you want to look at it. Most teams are playing three receivers over 50% of the time. You're in nickel more than 50% of the time anyway. So your base defense, while important, is not as important. And if you could be flexible, it opens a lot of things
up. And you get into the Patriots and you look at what we did with Barnage. Barnage not connected to the line of scrimmage, but in a flex situation. So you're playing so much nickel defense that it becomes your base defense. And then when you flex out a Gronkowski or you flex out a Barnage, I'm looking at some of the tight ends we might play this year. But who's the guy in Washington? Reed?
Jordan Reed.
His name escaped me. Jordan Reed. Those guys, you're comfortable in that situation. And you can still play the run because you're in it so frequently. And those teams that do it get really, really good.
Yes. And there are plenty of teams in the NFL that are good 4-3 teams that play just a few coverages. I was talking to some of the Atlanta coaches. They play like seven defenses. That's Dan Quinn coming from
yeah.
Seattle, where that's all Seattle did. In Carolina, it's the same thing. And those are Seattle and Carolina, two of the best defenses in the NFL. Now, the 1-3-4 example is that where you have a dominant defense is Denver. But you've got two Pro Bowl-level corners. You've got two Pro Bowl-level pass rushers on the outside. It'll be interesting to see with the loss of Malik Jackson if they can continue up there. But they had all of the pieces. It all came together for that defense for the Denver Broncos, and they are your Super Bowl champions due in large part to that defense. When we come back, we're going to go – after further review here on this Monday, we've got from the podium Patrick Murray still to come, and more of your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Actually, before we take the break, Case, we still got Matt. Let's get Matt and Canton on here. Matt.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, how
good,
are you?
Man.
Good. Guys, I was listening to a national radio show host earlier. He has about 50 million listeners worldwide, and he said if the Browns would pick up Deshaun Watson with the number one draft pick, he would advise Watson to pull a John Elway, Baltimore Colts, or a Eli Manning, San Diego Chargers, and refuse to play for the Cleveland Browns because their organization is a dumpster fire. I was wondering what you guys would think about that, just coming from that, or you know, the organization viewpoint. I'm a huge Browns fan, but to hear somebody who has that many millions of followers and his perception of the Cleveland Browns is
a hot take.
Perception.
It is a hot take. It's a financially unsound take. That would be, you know, to the detriment of over $10 million. You know, as I was talking to somebody about the Joey Bosa situation, if he does sit out this year and sign somewhere else, he's costing himself a year of getting to free agency.
Correct.
That doesn't count as a crew. It's not like he
kind of the same way that Josh Gordon's suspension has, correct?
Right, exactly. So I don't see it happening. And the truth be told, this organization, I think we all hope and want a year from now to be in a completely different place than it is right now. And that might not be because of a lot of wins, but it might be because things are starting to be done the right way, like they were in Jacksonville and Oakland, where they still picked in the top six the following year in the draft. In fact, they both picked in the top four the following year when the Raiders then got Amari Cooper following the Khalil Mack, Derek Carr draft. The Jags picked Dante Fowler Jr. third after picking Blake Bortles the year before. But they could be getting there,
yes.
Getting somewhere where, you know, you feel good about it. And a guy like Deshaun Watson could feel like he's the piece that puts it over the top. I'm not worried about that. My focus right now is on the quarterbacks on this roster, the players on this roster, and seeing if Robert Griffin III, a guy who's already been the Rookie of the Year in the National Football League, can regain his form under the tutelage of Hugh Jackson, Pep Hamilton, et cetera, here with the Cleveland Browns. When we come back, we will go. We'll do a little after further review. Still to come, Patrick Murray and more of your phone calls, 216-578-0850 on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. If you're just joining the show today, the big news here in Berea, the Browns have trimmed their roster down to 76 members on the team. Now they need to get to 75 by 4 p.m. tomorrow. They terminated the contracts of veteran quarterback Austin Davis, defensive lineman Nick Hayden, and linebacker Paul Kruger, and probably the biggest surprise there and the one that's generating the most buzz. They also waived defensive back Sean Baker, tight end E.J. Bibbs, wide receiver Josh Boyce, kicker Travis Coons, which means Patrick Murray will be the team's kicker as of now. Wide receiver Ed Egan, fullback Robert Hughes, tight end David Reeds, offensive lineman Corey Tucker, and place Niall Lawrence Stample and Glenn Winston onto injured reserve. 216-578-0850, the way to dial us up on the phone. Now, also, it is time to bring in our producer, Casey Kulis. Mr. Kulis, what's up, bro?
What's up, bros? How you guys doing?
We're good.
Living the dream.
Is that what it is?
Talking Browns on a Monday.
That's right. Living the dream, and we're ready for a little after further review.
After further review.
All right, guys, we're going to kick this one off with a fact or fiction. Fact or fiction, the Buccaneers will be a playoff team this season.
I believe that's going to be fiction. And the reason why is because they may be the third best team in their division. I think the Carolina Panthers aren't going to miss much of a beat with Cam Newton in that, you know, getting Kelvin Benjamin back this year. And I think there's going to be a resurgence by the New Orleans Saints this year. They've had some overhaul, especially on the defensive side of the football. They'll be better on defense. And I think Drew Brees has got a little bit of gas in his left in his tank, and they're going to be better than a lot of people think.
I agree. I think that it is fiction, but they are an ascending football team going in the right direction with Jameis Winston, who was very impressive with our time down there in Tampa. He's impressive. Mike Evans is impressive. They still have a little bit of gas left in the tank with Vincent Jackson. They've got the good running backs and Doug Martin and Charles Sims. Some young tight ends, Austin Seferin Jenkins, Cameron Brate they like. Vernon Hargraves certainly looked.
You know what I meant
to
ask you? How did Noah Spence look?
Good.
Okay.
I mean, had a sack in the game, was beating Dan France.
I just meant even, but just in practice.
Practice, he looked good. Very fast, very strong. He's a true edge rusher, 3-4 outside linebacker. He looked very good. Now, they used him, interestingly, because they play a lot of four-man fronts with Gerald McCoy, but they used him always in a two-point stance off of an end to kind of give him that. So maybe he was playing Sam, I guess, but was getting the rush and getting to the quarterback.
Nice.
After further review.
All right, guys, we want to know your thoughts on Colin Kaepernick not standing for the anthem.
I don't like it. And I think, you know, I have my right, and believe me, I want equality for all. I think what's going on in our country right now is, I'm not proud of that. But I think furthermore, I am proud of what that flag and what that anthem represents to me and should be to all. And I think for Colin Kaepernick, I think it's a shame because without that flag and without that anthem, he would not have the right to play a game for a living and make the kind of money that he does if it wasn't for our forefathers and the military that fight for our independence, that fight for that flag, that die for that flag each and every day. And even furthermore, it's, you know, we have an African-American president right now, so it's like, what are you really going up against? And I don't want to make it about race, but he has every right to take his stand, but our league, the National Football League, has a appreciation month for our military because of what they do. And I'd like to see Colin Kaepernick not stand for a national anthem when there are hundreds of soldiers holding out an NFL football size American flag on that, covering the entire football field, and Colin Kaepernick stand then. Because I wouldn't be surprised that if one of those soldiers wouldn't go over there and fight him.
I think this is a very touchy subject.
And it is.
And my opinion on it is really as follows. And it was interesting. I was talking with some people who were in the military who tweeted me, and then some that I actually ran into and spoke with over the weekend. I don't agree with it. I don't agree with what he is doing. But as some of the guys who served in the military, some who even follow our show, have said to me, they fought for the rights of America, and one of that's his right to do that. You don't have to agree with it.
Sure.
It's just his right to do it, and so that's where I'm at. One of the things that makes America what it is the right to dissent and the right to voice your opinion or demonstrate how you want and show your dissatisfaction. I just don't have to agree with it.
Correct. I agree.
After further review.
All right, guys. Are you buying or selling Brock Osweiler?
I'm buying it. I might not be buying it for what the Houston Texans actually paid him, but I'm buying it in regards to that franchise, along with their head coach and some of the young weapons that they have, needed a franchise quarterback, and I think they overpaid slightly to get that. And they have a window of time where that defense is going to be great with J.J. Watt and Cushing towards the end of his career. And you got, you know, the Hopkins kid as a wide receiver. They added, what, Jalen Strong?
Will Fuller. Been blowing up. And Braxton Miller.
Correct. And Braxton Miller. So they have a window to win, and they needed the right man, a quarterback, to be their franchise guy instead of, you know, the carousel wheel that has been quarterback for the Houston Texans.
Yes, indeed. I'm... Again, not 100% sold, but I do think he's got the pieces around him to be efficient. The biggest question mark for them is going to be the injuries on their offensive line. Can they protect him? But I think that's an exciting offense, and obviously we know it's a very good defense in Houston.
After further review.
All right, guys, last one. It is 2:35, and Tony Romo is still hurt. If Dak Prescott has to play the first 8 games of the season, what will the Cowboys' record be after those 8 games? If he has to start the first 8 games.
I'm going to go without looking at their schedule. Nathan, can you pull up their schedule? Are you pulling up their schedule?
To the Dallas Cowboys.
The Dallas Cowboys, sure. If you can. Yeah. And then make it easier for me to say.
All right, you ready?
Yep.
Ready.
Dallas Cowboys schedule. Versus the Giants, at Redskins, home for the Bears, at Niners, home for the Bengals, at Packers, home for the Eagles, at the Browns, at the Steelers, home for the Ravens, home for the Redskins, at the Vikings.
So first 8. I'm going to go, they're going to be 3-5 after 8 football games with Dak Prescott as their quarterback. And I don't think it's going to have everything to do with Dak Prescott. I just think the Cowboys still have some missing pieces, and I think Romo hides a lot of their troubles.
I think 3-5 is about right. 4-4 potentially if they can play well. I think that offensive line is going to help Ezekiel Elliott, etc. They're going to be able to control the football that way. But the questions for me still are on the defensive side of that team, where they've got a lot of suspensions on the defensive side, especially with their pass rushers early in the year.
I think that's it.
That's it, dudes.
All right, that's it, Casey. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mon Frere.
Thanks for having me.
All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from the Browns' new kicker, Patrick Murray, on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Patrick Murray won the kicker competition today when it was announced that the Browns had released Travis Coons. He spoke with the media about what this means.
Congratulations on winning the kicker job.
Hey, it's just the beginning.
What does it mean for you?
First and foremost, it's an honor to represent this organization in this city. It's an honor to play for the Cleveland Browns, and I'm just really looking forward to continuing and representing this organization well.
Yeah, you had to come back from that ACL, kind of earn your way back. You got cut by Tampa. Kind of talk about what it means from that perspective.
You know, it's huge. There was never a doubt in my mind that I could continue to play at this level. I was very fortunate to have an amazing support system around me, helping me through that process. And yeah, I guess it makes it that much sweeter to come back.
I know that the opportunities aren't huge in the preseason because you're determined on what the team is doing, but how much of this was won for you on the practice field, maybe behind the scenes, stuff we weren't able to see?
You know, I can only speak on the fact that I did what I had to do during practice and the opportunities that I was given. I made the most of them. Again, I don't make the decisions. I just go out there and try and put my best foot forward, and I believe that's what I did.
What did you learn the first time through the process that made you a better kicker here?
You know, it's to never take an opportunity for granted first and foremost, and to really appreciate every kick like it's going to be your last, because you never know when that opportunity is going to be taken away. And I feel like that has definitely steeled my motivation to just continue to get better every day.
You ever meet
probably going to ask this, but you ever meet Phil Dawson, who had a lot to say about kicking in Cleveland as a very unique place and maybe the toughest place to kick?
I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Phil yet. Andy Lee knows him very well, and he's given me some pointers. But I'm up for the challenge, and I'm looking forward to it. I respect Phil. In my opinion, he's a Hall of Fame kicker, and I hope to, you know, live up to the expectation of kickers in Cleveland.
Kicking in August in Cleveland is obviously night and day from October, November, mm-hmm. December. What will you do? What do you do as a kicker to, I guess, prepare yourself for the ever-changing, you know, conditions? And that stadium's one of the tougher ones to kick in.
Right, absolutely. Well, I kicked in the old MetLife Stadium in high school for those state championship games, and that's a wind tunnel. I played in Northeast my entire life. Played in the blizzard against Army my junior year in college, so I'm no stranger to difficult conditions. And it just depends on the way the wind's blowing that day, but I have confidence in my technique, and I have confidence in Charlie and Andy that we're going to get the job done.
Patrick, did you have other opportunities assigned, or was it only Cleveland, and why did you choose Cleveland?
It was only Cleveland. I worked out for two other teams after I got released, and to be honest with you, as soon as I did get released, I was looking forward to hopefully Cleveland calling me. I really wanted to play for this organization. I love the way that this organization represents itself. I love what they stand for. I love what these fans stand for. And I'm just so fortunate to be able to play for them.
How did you know about the Browns, you know, before?
Who doesn't know about the Browns? I mean, you've got Jim Brown walking around the locker room. What other organization can say they have that?
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm just saying that he retired, what, you know, like 35 years before he
was the best running back of all time. Everybody knows Jim Brown.
But still, I mean, the Browns' reputation, well, frankly, since they've been back, has not been kind of like what you're describing.
I disagree. I think of it as a hard-working, blue-collar organization. And that's the type of environment that I grew up in, and that's the type of organization that I wanted to play for.
Have you thought about, you know, you've gone through the pressure of one NFL season, kicking all kinds of environments as you just described, but do you feel that that one season of live kicking and, you know, the one season of, I guess, hanging around, we were around the team last year?
I was, yes.
So you've seen it for 2 years and you kick it in it for one whole year. What's that do for you in terms of the confidence any kicker's got to have to function at this level?
Right, confidence is key when it comes to kicking. So to get that season under my belt is huge, and to have those memories to look back on and those feelings to draw from is huge as far as a confidence standpoint. But at the same time, I don't try to complicate things. I go out there with a smile on my face because I'm very blessed to play this game.
Is that, well, just to follow that up, when you're on the field, are you kind of in complete blackout mode, save for the two or three key points that you need to take onto the field for every kick?
I wouldn't say blackout mode. I enjoy watching football, so I'm always engaged in the game. But when it comes down to do my job, there is a certain switch that gets flipped, that's for sure.
Do you track conditions and stuff like that? You know, not to keep going back to Phil, but one of the things that Phil did when he was in Cleveland was he was very meticulous, and he would keep a diary of every kick and conditions and stuff like that. As a kicker who, you know, as you mentioned, you've kicked in elements before, what do you do to, I guess, prepare yourself / know what you're actually dealing with?
You know, again, I'm not the type of person who's going to complicate things too much. You get the whole week of practice to see what the weather's going to be like on Sunday. We're going to be practicing outside here, so you're going to deal with conditions throughout the week. And if adjustments need to be made, I'll make them during the week. And then come game time, the conditions could change completely. So for me, I try not to think about it too much because it's just going to get in my head. I'd rather go out there, clean slate, see what we got going on. Let's make adjustments. Let's go win the football game.
Just one last quick thing. When it dawned on you that you're the kicker here, you know, what sort of a sense of satisfaction is that?
Obviously, getting an opportunity to play in the NFL, there is a sense of satisfaction of reaching your dream, coming back from an injury, again, having another opportunity to play the game that you love, and getting to share that with my family. There's nothing better than that.
You got a big family?
You know, I've got my mom and dad, my brother, my grandma, and my uncle here. The rest of my family's over in Ireland. So I know they're having a good time over there, and they're enjoying it.
That's Patrick Murray. Certainly loves Cleveland. I like his no-nonsense approach and interview style.
Jim Brown?
He tells him what he thinks. Jim Brown. He's like, who doesn't know Jim Brown? He's the greatest guy there. Some tough questions in there, but I thought he did a good job. And I hope that we at some point get to the day where a kicker in a city can, a Cleveland Browns kicker can go through an interview without at least 20 different Phil Dawson questions. Like, it's over. It's happened. It's over.
It's what, 4 years now?
Look, Phil Dawson is a legend. Let me just tell you, I get it. But it's not like Phil Dawson, you know, kicked a game-winning kick in the Super Bowl for this city.
Correct. He just was Mr. Automatic for a bunch of 5-11 football teams.
I do like Patrick Murray, though. I feel like he gets it. I feel like he gets Cleveland. I feel like I enjoyed all of that. By the way, some breaking news from around the National Football League. Joey Bosa apparently has blinked and has signed his contract with the San Diego Chargers. It wasn't that long ago they sent out that pretty nasty release. Well, now Joey Bosa has signed on the dotted line. GM Tom Telesco saying, we look forward to having Joey join us and getting him prepared as quickly as possible for the 2016 season. When we come back, Matt and I will give you our final thoughts as we wrap it up here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl. Bria, Matt, after a game like we saw Friday, they get back to work, you know, practicing today. A lot of those guys back out there. What are the expectations after a game like that? You watch the tape, and then what do they have to do?
Well, I think the expectation is that even though camp has broken, that it's going to be a grind you out next couple days for Hugh Jackson because they have a lot to figure out. And what's very hard is, you know, as we get accustomed sometimes in the past after, you know, a beatdown on a Sunday, we always talk about, well, what we expect the next Sunday. And in this case, you know, the Tampa game had a feeling of that it mattered because it was that mock game, the pinnacle third preseason game, you know, that so many people kind of put more merit in, and yet we looked that way, and we won't have that opportunity to truly go out and look the same ever again until September 11th against the Eagles. You know, who plays in the Bears game, how much they play. And I think, as you kind of pointed out, whoever starts on special teams is a big indication of who's going to make this football team. I think what starters play and how much they play in this Bears game is an indication of whose job and whose role, not so much job, but whose role in this offense or defense is still yet to be determined. And I think if they take it seriously and go out and play well in the Bears game, they solidify that role on offense or defense. If they go out and the Bears continue to run the football and we still can't stop anybody in the pass game, you really have to look at yourself as a 75-man roster. And as you and I say, there might be a guy off of waivers from another team, a veteran cornerback or a veteran defensive, you know, or outside pass rusher, defensive/defensive end. There may be 3 to 5 guys that are not currently Cleveland Browns that end up making the final 53 that board that plane to Philadelphia.
Yes, indeed. By the way,
yes,
I just got a fun tweet. Wake up, Nathan. This isn't man. Stop with the spin zone and Kool-Aid drinking. Every Brown is Pro Bowl bound. Who have I said is going to the Pro Bowl? Joe Thomas. Have I sent anybody to the Pro Bowl yet?
No.
No? I don't think so. I'm trying to be very realistic about where we are and what we saw this past week. Not good enough. Work needs to be done for the Cleveland Browns, and that work is going on right now here in Berea. All right. We'll be back tomorrow with more CBD. And, of course, tomorrow night, it's the Hugh Jackson Show. Tonight, stay tuned for the Browns preview show all along the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns radio network with Ken Carmen and Gerard Sherry. Tomorrow night, it's myself, Ken, and Hugh Jackson. For Casey Coolis, Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to CBD
on ESPN 850 WKNR.